Becoming a full-time writer can be overwhelming. Join Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon as they help you improve your craft and find your audience so you too can become a career author. This is the Career Author Podcast.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Career Author Podcast. I'm Zach Bohannon, and with me every single week is Jay Thorne. What's up, dude?
How you doing, man?
Man, I am actually doing quite well. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm back to back today. I'm going from like one task to another without a break, but I like my days like that. I like to like look up around 5 or 6 in the afternoon and be like, yeah, I got a lot of shit done today.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, it's last couple of weeks have just been kind of a whirlwind and in a good way, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this on a future episode, and I know you know about it, but my journey towards minimalism is just going amazingly.
So. Is it?
Yeah, like you can't, like, I mean, people who, if you're watching on YouTube and you normally watch, like, you might be able to kind of tell in my office, but my office is like, really my desk, if you could really see that, is just like, I mean, I've taken probably 3 trunk loads of stuff to Goodwill already. And I went and sold a bunch of stuff at a local, like, place that takes books and music and CDs and stuff. And, you know, I made like several hundred dollars just selling stuff. And it's been, and we haven't even gotten into our garage yet. We're doing that this week, and our garage is crazy packed. So it's been awesome. And just, you know, it's just getting rid of things and kind of applying the 80-20 rule to your life. Like, we use 80% of this stuff, 20% of the, or sorry, 20% of this stuff, 80% of the time.
Yep.
Like, you don't, you just get rid of everything else.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been awesome.
Nice. So, good. Glad to hear that.
Yeah. So anyways, we're not going to talk about minimalism this week. Like I said, it probably will come up again at some point, but our topic today is exposition as ammunition, which Jay has framed as show, don't tell. So we have a crafty episode today. We're going to talk a little bit about showing versus telling, which is a big mistake a lot of fiction authors make, especially newer authors. But I think most authors find themselves actually slipping into that quite, you know, even no matter how seasoned they are. So, but before we get into that, we want to remind everybody that the Career Author Podcast is brought to you by all our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/thecareerauthor. And for as little as $1 a month, you can support the show and gain access to our 2 monthly bonus episodes, which include our monthly Q&A, where you can ask Jay and I anything and we're going to answer it, and our movie analysis episode, which this month, I guess I can jump a little ahead and announce, is going to be Ex Machina is the movie that won. But you could check out all that stuff and more and all the other benefits you get over at patreon.com/thecareerauthor. And once again, just a reminder, our March movie is going to be Ex Machina, which I believe is on Netflix, correct?
I think that's where I watched it the first time, yeah.
It upset Back to the Future, which was surprising to both me and Jay. But we'll be doing that one this month. And we also want to let you know, career author related, that, and if you are watching on YouTube, you're probably already seeing this on me, but we have a career author t-shirt available. I'm wearing it. So again, on YouTube, you can check out, I just got mine in today. We have it available on Amazon, and I believe that we have a hoodie as well and a pop socket.
That's right? Correct. Yeah. It's all on the homepage on the .com. If you scroll down towards the bottom, you'll see all 3 items.
And like the t-shirt, those are through Amazon, correct?
So that is correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can get Prime shipping on this stuff, which is really, really cool.
And they're priced almost at cost. We're not going to make a ton of money on these. We just kind of want to be able to make them available. So they're relatively inexpensive t-shirts.
Yeah. So, and again, you get free Prime shipping. It does take probably an extra day or two because these are print on demand shirts. So they don't just have them in stock. We're not that popular. If enough of you buy them, they might stock them, but you know, we'll see. But so those are available. We'll have a link in the show notes, but you can just go to careerauthor.com and all this stuff will be on there too. And they're available in a wide array of colors, and we have men and women's fits as well. So pretty cool, really good quality shirt. one other quick thing, and then I'll let Jay make an announcement because he likes stealing my thunder on that stuff while I let him do it. We want to remind everybody that even though our two world building events this year, which is Rock Apoc in May, which we're having in Cleveland, and Sci-Fi Seattle, which we're having in September in Seattle, they're sold out for in-person tickets. We want to remind everybody that virtual tickets are available. So if you want to, basically what the virtual ticket gets you is you'll get you'll get audio files of all the world building stuff that we do with the group in person. And then you will be eligible to submit for the anthology and to potentially have your story included that you write in the worlds we build. So we've got the virtual tickets available. They're under $100. Though you can check those out at rockapoc.com if you're interested in doing an apocalyptic story, or if you just have a general sci-fi thing, sci-fiseattle.com is the website for that. When again, we'll have the links to the show notes.
Yeah. And if you're bummed that you missed out and you can't attend in person, you can also go there, click on the sold out button and give us your email address. And then we will notify you early because we have some freaking amazing 2020 events in the works. And we're going to be talking about those soon. And so if you get on that list, we'll let you know ahead of time what those events are and give you first crack.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, it's going to be awesome. So that's a few weeks ago in Cincinnati. That's what we spent a bulk of our time talking about.
And you guys know how we are. We can't, like, we got to keep upping our game and making it more interesting for ourselves. So it's going to be, it was a real challenge to top, Rock Apoc and Sci-Fi Seattle and Authors on a Train in New Orleans, but we feel pretty good that what we're bringing in 2020 is going to be awesome.
So yeah, so like Jay said, you can go click over and on the website there and sign up for updates and be the first to know, because again, these are limited seating events and we've got some really cool stuff coming in 2020. So, so Jay, you want to make this announcement here we have signed yet another author.
Yeah, you're so gracious to let me do this every time because I love doing these.
Well, I've talked a lot in fairness.
Yeah, we're really excited to bring another author into the family. And we both got to know this woman at Somewhere Book Show Summit last year because she was kind of helping out. And then over the course of the year, we got to know her, and she came on to Authors on a Train 2018 with us, and got to know her even better. And I worked with her on some story ideas, and she is she's phenomenal. She's incredibly organized and articulate, and her writing on genre is spot on. And we're really excited to announce that Cameron Coral is our newest Molten Universe Media author. So welcome, Cameron. It's so amazing to have you. And I was telling Zach before the decision was made, before you signed on with us, that I was really hoping you would, because you guys are gonna see, Cameron is an incredible writer, and she's writing this really sort of modern, like fast paced hip sci-fi, and I think it's just gonna bring such a cool angle to Molten Universe Media.
Yeah, I'm excited. I she's, like you said, she's a fantastic writer. She's got really, really cool ideas, and she's a career author. So
yeah,
she basically represents everything we talk about on the show as far as what being a career author is. So welcome, Cameron. We're really glad to have you on board, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So
right on.
Yeah. So moving forward, we will go ahead and jump into our ways and hacks for the week. And Jay, I believe you have a way for us this week, correct?
I do have a way. Yes, this is a productivity way, and it's for those of you who use Google Docs and Slack. And this is a really cool integration. And I know that integrations for apps can kind of get confusing, and it can be overwhelming because different apps configure and integrate in different ways. But wow, this one is so great, because one of the problems I have with Google Drive, and I wonder if this has something to do with the ownership level of the file, but I don't get notified by Google if there are changes made in a document. And that I want that, because, like, especially if you and I are working on a document and we're commenting and you're expecting me to like comment back on something, I don't know. A lot of times I don't know you're even in that document unless I open it. And I'm not going to go and open every Google document.
I think it does have to do with ownership, because I'll get notified from time to time if you comment on a document that I created.
Yeah.
But I'll never get notified on a document if something you create.
Right.
So I think it is an ownership level thing.
Yeah,
right? Your
hack
here fixes that. So.
Yeah, it kind of does. So basically the way it works is you can add Google Drive to your Slack integration. So through Slack, the exact steps you can figure out, it's not hard, but in Slack, you basically add Google Drive. And then what it does is it creates a Google Drive direct message bot that sits within your Slack app. So it doesn't even matter like what team you're in or what board you're in, just in your, like whatever board you assign it, that's where the direct messages show up. And then every time there's a change to the document, I get a Slack notification. Even if I don't have Google Drive open or you know, but it's really convenient, because then not only do I get the notification, but then I can click on the notification and it takes me to that comment in the Google Doc. So it's a really simple productivity way, but one I've found really useful, especially for those of you who are working in Google Docs and Slack at the same time.
Yeah. I'll have to ask you something off air, because I need to reassign mine to a different workspace. And I tried doing it the other day because I have it in one I don't want it in. So I need to reassign it to ours, but I couldn't figure it out the other day. So I might ask you about that after. Or I guess I could just Google it instead of wasting it. But anyways, yeah, really good trick if you are using both Slack and Google. And if you're, especially if you're collaborating, it's very, very, very helpful. So
yes,
good way there.
And it links to your Drive, not to a specific document. So any document within your Drive, anywhere, you get those notifications on it.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. So let's go ahead and jump into our topic this week, which is, again, Jay is titling Exposition as Ammunition, Show, Don't Tell. So Jay, I'll let you kind of take over here and talk a little, maybe introduce this topic a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I can't really take credit for Exposition as Ammunition, as you guys are going to find out, but that's definitely what this is about. And I don't remember who it was. I believe months ago we had a question from a listener about this. It might have been Lefty. I'm not sure. But the question was like, what is exposition as ammunition, and why does it matter? And I thought this would be a great opportunity to look into that, because over the past couple weeks, and I probably have a few more weeks to go, I'm really heavily into research for Story Levels. I think we talked about this a little bit last week, in that I'm going through just volume after volume of methodology books. I'm taking notes. I'm sort of overlaying story architecture over top of each other to kind of see where things line up and how that's going to work for Story Levels. And I'm just learning a ton. And this goes back to things I've heard before other people say, that, you know, the best way you can learn something is to teach it. And basically when you're writing a book about a process, you're teaching it. And so I'm just learning so much about story, so much more about story that I couldn't even think was possible. And I came across, I'll hold it up here for the YouTube people. This is Robert McKee's book, Story. Sean Coyne of StoryGrid was Robert McKee's both agent and editor at one point, and they kind of share a common lineage and vocabulary and story methodology. And I'd highly recommend McKee's book for those of you who are big time story nerds. I thought this was a great opportunity to take a look at this, because it sounds like a confusing idea, exposition as ammunition. And it's also gets into a little bit about show, don't tell, which is also kind of hard to grasp, I think, not only for beginning writers, but just for writers in general. Like, what does that mean, show, don't tell? And there are some examples, but it's not a hard and fast rule. So I thought this would be a really interesting kind of conversation that maybe I could kind of explain or summarize how McKee talks about it. You and Isaac can talk about how it shows up in our writing and what we do with it. And then I even have a few examples that we can go through and kind of talk through those, and maybe that'll help explain what it is.
Perfect.
All right. So this is from, and I have this bookmarked here in my paper copy. This is from page 334, chapter 15, titled Exposition, and the subtitle is Show, Don't Tell. And one of the, you know, McKee is really looking at story for screenwriters. So this book is really, I think, meant to be for movie making. In fact, the subtitle is The Principles of Screenwriting. But clearly, you know, there's a lot in here that applies to novel writing as well. And I think this is one of those things. So basically, show don't tell. Let's start there. So the old adage is that you don't want to tell the reader information they need. You need to show it to them. And again, this is there's some gray area here, because if you're writing in first person, you have to tell some things because it's first person and you are the narrator, right? But generally speaking, you want to show through character behavior and actions the information that the reader needs rather than just telling the reader. So a common way this shows up that we've talked about before is when you first open a book and you get the quote-unquote info dump. All right. The info dump is what the inexperienced writer believes is necessary for the reader, meaning that they need to tell the reader all the rules of the world, the situation, the character's history. They have to tell the reader that up front. Otherwise, the reader won't know what's going on.
And sci-fi and fantasy, this is a big problem.
Yeah, it really is a big problem. It's a terrible way to start a story. And really, you know, the best way to do it is that you work that information in as the reader needs it. The reader doesn't need the 70-year history of the pre-galactic war era of your space opera before the first scene opens. Like, they just might need to know that there's a battle taking place. That's it. And I think the big takeaway from this in Show Don't Tell and or Exposition as Ammunition is only give the reader what they need at the moment. Okay. So you don't need to tell them everything that's happening in the world. So that's Show Don't Tell. All right. So let's move now to Exposition as Ammunition. Robert McKee says that exposition is simply facts. All right. That's what the word means. It's facts of the world, of the story, of the characters. And he believes, and this is a direct quote, character should never tell the reader about the world. And I think I would agree with this.
Yeah, and I don't want to cut you off, but
no, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, the reader lives in that, like, the character lives in that world. So, like, if I walk up to a door and I open a door, I'm not going to tell you how the door works. Like, that's like a common thing I see in sci-fi is like, if they have a door open a certain way, like, the narrator will go in this big thing about how to open the door instead of just showing through action, like how that character opens the door, which is in their world a completely normal thing, you know?
Right.
So I think that's really a way to look at it, is your character is not going to go around explaining things that are totally normal to them. They're just going to do it, and you can reveal that through the action.
Right. Exactly. And another example in the sci-fi world would be, and I see this a lot in like spacecraft propulsion, right? You don't need, as the author, to explain, I'm making this up, like hydrogen fusion fuel cells. Like, you don't need to go pages and pages explaining how that's done. If you want to tell the reader that the hydrogen is powering the ship, you just simply show a character like loading a hydrogen cartridge. Yep. Like, that's all you need. Right? Now, if it's important to the plot as to the physics of that, then you tell the, or you show the reader that as necessary, but they don't need to know that to see the ship is flying initially.
Yeah.
All right. So McKee says that you should pass along necessary information through honest, natural behaviors. And again, Zach, this gets to your point of if these characters live in the world, they don't need to explain that world to each other. Yeah. That's not like, that is not an honest, natural behavior, right? So, you know, be like me saying, hey, Zach, so I'm ready for the podcast. So I got on Wi-Fi and I configured my Wi-Fi and then I like that's not natural, honest behavior. We both know how internet access works, so we would never talk about that.
Yeah.
So what McKee says is, he says, convert exposition, convert the facts to ammunition or a weapon. He says, characters using the information they have in their struggle with other characters. So if you think about in any scene, when their characters have wants and needs, and there's got to be some conflict, and the scene has to turn. So within that conflict, within that turn, there has to be some type of struggle, some type of battle, whether that's a physical battle, a verbal battle, mental battle, it doesn't matter. So those characters who are doing battle can use the information in the world against each other, which then also shows the reader the rules of the world without telling them. Now, this is really sophisticated, and I'm not saying it's easy to do, but it clearly is the most effective and most interesting way to do storytelling. So, Zach, do you have anything else before we kind of maybe look at some examples of exposition as ammunition?
No, you're nailing it. I think we should just go ahead and jump into some examples so people can see kind of what we're talking about.
All right, cool. So this is I mean I spent 5 minutes to write these. They're not highly artistic or this isn't highbrow literature, but I was just looking for a few sentences that would demonstrate this method. So here's the first one. Imagine you're reading this in a book. She looked at Bill, his bloodshot eyes red and watery. There goes your 30-day chip. So Zach, if you just read those two sentences, what does that tell you about Bill?
He is a struggling addict who fell off the wagon.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like I didn't have to say in walked Bill, who it was drunk again after he didn't show up for his AA meeting. And like, I'm not telling the reader that. Instead, we're showing it to them. But we're using that information, those facts, as ammunition. And the woman in this scene, whoever she happens to be, is clearly using that as a weapon against him. But at the same time, it's showing us Bill's condition.
That one, like, and it tells the reader so much about that character. Like, they can jump to a lot of assumptions about, like, and stereotypes, I guess, of what an addict is like, but they have an idea of how that character is going to react to things, what their motivations are going to be, kind of what their wants and needs are. Like you can really jump to a lot of conclusions about who that character is with that one line.
Yeah. It's a shorthand. And what's beautiful about this is you and I both believe in very lean, succinct storytelling. That's our style. It's what we like to read. It's what we like to write. And I believe generally speaking that the excitement in reading is creating the world in your mind. And so therefore you as the author need to give the reader space to do that. And I think it's these types of strategies that allow the reader to get the information they need, but also they get to create this situation. Like we may never have to go back in, if first a novel, we might never have to go back into Bill's history with alcoholism because we, in one sentence, we let the reader create that history for us. And maybe it's more powerful for them because they're connecting it to their own experience or to a relative's experience. Instead of us telling them exactly what the situation was, they get to create it. And I think that's a really a magical part of storytelling that I enjoy.
Yeah, because if you were just telling the reader here, you know, if they something like she looked at Bill, she knew he was an addict, like or something like that, like he was an addict because 10 years ago he struggled with blah blah, and you go on like this big backstory or whatever, and you're just telling like you're using log here to get one little thing across.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and not to the same degree, but. It even gives you a little insight into whoever this woman is. Because if you think about like in a world situation, when would you say that kind of thing to someone? Like, I mean, I wrote it, so obviously I had this in my head, but I was thinking like she's angry, right? Like this is not something you'd say to someone in like a supportive way. I get the feeling this woman's been like burned by him before. Yeah. Maybe he was supposed to do something and he didn't show up. And the fact that she says, there goes your 30-day chip is a jab. And like, I think it tells you a lot about her and her relationship to him. And we haven't even named her.
And another part of this sense I want to break down is how you say, you describe what he looks like. like his bloodshot eyes red and watery, when a less experienced author might say Bill was high.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, and just tell the reader, or, you know, I see that one pretty, that's a pretty common one mistake too. We actually had one in a manuscript I was working on today for us where we said a character was frustrated.
Yeah.
And our editor called us out and was like, you guys need to show, not tell here. And so, I had to go in and put a description of like showing, like using the character's face and emotion to show that he was frustrated instead of just telling the reader he was.
That's right. And that's even telling in passive voice too, which is kind of,
yeah,
also
that's getting
into
passive,
right?
Voice too, which is a whole other thing, but they're tied together in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So let's take a look at this second one. This is simply one line of dialogue. So there's not even a character in this one. Right? I don't care if you are the president's best friend. You don't get into my lobby without proper clearance. So what could you tell from the character who spoke that, Zach?
Man, that speaker is definitely a stickler for the rules and takes his or her job really seriously.
Zach is reading modes, by the way.
You said it perfect. That's exactly what it is, though.
Yeah, I was trying to get across this idea that maybe it's a Secret Service agent, FBI operative. We don't know exactly, and we don't know what lobby. Like, I'm guessing it's a hotel lobby, and maybe the president is staying there for some reason. And someone is trying to get into the lobby, and this person and tells them, I'm the president's best friend, and this person still won't let them in. And I think this would be a way of showing how the person who spoke this line is one of those, it's an archetype or a stereotype, depending on how you want to look at it, but like hardcore, by the rules, like, company man kind of mentality. And that this is another example of instead of saying that, like, we can show it with this exposition as ammunition. And it also tells us a little bit about the person who's trying to get in. And since I don't have notes for that one, Zach, what do you think it might show about the person who's trying to get into the lobby?
It's Frank Castle. He's kicked her ass.
Yeah, he just would have shot the guy right in the forehead and walked in. I think this also, like, this could be a character who has a sense of entitlement.
Yeah,
maybe privilege. Sure, yeah. You know, it's like, I'm just gonna name drop. Oh, I'm the president's best friend. I deserve to be in there. So
in there, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, just a different example. All right, I got. One more, it's kind of a two-parter here. So I don't know why I chose Johnny. I don't know, something about the name Johnny I like.
Symmetric Designs.
Yeah, maybe.
Check out Symmetric.
Ding, ding.
He made this career author logo.
Nice connection there.
Nice.
All right, so here's what you read. Johnny picked up a bowling ball and winked at his sister. Yet another defeat at the hands of the master.
Man, Johnny is just a typical older brother. Maybe knows that he thinks he's in charge.
Yeah, man, you read pretty well. That's good. Yeah,
you're welcome.
Yep. So taking a step deeper, how old do you think they might be?
I would say probably like early teens, probably somewhere in there. That'd be my guess.
Yep. And what about the relationship between the two?
To me, like, I mean, he's obviously like a little snarky and likes to pick on her because he knows that he, you know, maybe is just better at her at those type of things. So he's able to kind of pick on her, but it's probably mostly like lighthearted out of love, I would, in my estimation. So,
yeah, that was what I was going for. Because typically, I don't know, brothers and sisters bowling. I don't know. Have you ever bowled with your sister?
Yeah, I have actually. Yeah.
As an adult?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. So I haven't.
Yeah, I have.
All right. So I thought like this could be, you know, this could definitely be siblings kind of hanging out, maybe, like you said, in maybe their teen years. And I also, the fact that Johnny winked at her, led me to believe that like, it's a pretty good relationship. Like he feels like he can tease her a little bit and that, you know, she can take that, and it's kind of playful. It's not like hurtful. Right.
Yeah.
And then the second part of it is her response. "It's fine," she said. "Mom gave me the card for tonight."
That's exactly what my sister said to me last time we bowled, like 2 years ago.
When your mom was paying for it.
She's like, "Damn it. You, of course she did." So,
so what's that tell us about the sister?
That she's probably more responsible, Johnny, and wants him to know that.
I'm not giving you the answer key anymore because you just say it with this like this stupid ass tone. Like,
well, what do you want me to say? That's, I mean, that's what it is. Like, it,
clear, you can just pretend, you can just pretend you're not reading it.
You know, people wouldn't have known that if you wouldn't have said, like, now everyone's watching YouTube. Now everyone can see my face. And see my eyes go over to the script over there.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's, you know, clearly, I think you guys see where I'm going with this. It, this idea that like it's, you know, it's back and forth. You know, maybe the sister is a little younger, more responsible. The parents trust her, but like the older brother's still the older brother. Again, like if you step back and take a look at these just handful of very poorly written sentences, you can see how you can take the information that you need to convey to the reader and put it in the hands of the character and use it in dialogue. So I don't have to go into details about Johnny and his sister and how they pal around together or how they hang out or how she's more responsible than him, or like we don't need to go in there and tell the reader all that stuff. We can show it even in as few as a few lines. We can do that. So imagine you have an entire scene with two characters. There's a lot you can show the reader that you never have to revisit if you do it properly.
Yeah, and in, like especially with this situation, like most people can relate to this type of situation, even if it's not a brother sister relationship. Even it could be a friend, you know, and you guys, you know, you bust each other's asses while you're doing stuff and like bowling or whatever, and you get really competitive and you kind of pick on it. Like my point is that people are going to be able to, like, you're making the characters relatable to the reader. And in doing that, you're giving them all the information they need just between how these two characters are conversing with one another. With,
yeah.
You having to go into a bunch of, you know, telling like why they're acting like this. Like you get it just by reading this simple dialogue.
Yeah. And I think too, the other thing that it does is when we're writing characters and we're writing scenes, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create characters and scenes that will resonate with the reader, where the reader will go, "Oh, I know, like, yeah, I've been there. I've been disappointed by someone who I was an addict who I trusted and let me down, or I've been in a situation where I had to be a stickler for the rules and that irritated people, or I've been in a situation where I was good, you know, good natured ribbing of a friend or a relative or a sibling." But really what we're trying to do is we're trying to go deeper than that. We're trying to get the reader to then feel that emotion. And the experience that they have is simply the connection through the writing all the way to the emotion, because it's the emotional resonance that keeps readers reading. It's not the facts. It's not the world building, which is why the info dump is such a terrible idea, because that is not connecting on any emotion with the reader. But what this does is this is like, okay, what does it feel like to be let down? Or what does it feel like to be the rule follower when everyone else is not? Or what does it feel like to be the younger sister or the older brother? Like it's those feelings that we're going for.
If you want to see a really good example of how to set up a world without telling and showing, watch any Pixar film. Mm. Like seriously, like Pixar is brilliant at this. Now, I remember, like, for example, like in Toy Story, like during the first of the movie, when, you know, the birthday party is about to start happening, You know, Woody's obviously, you know, Woody says something like, oh, come on, guys, we don't have to be concerned, because they're all the other toys are worried about other toys being brought into the house and Andy wanting to play with them. And then Mr. Potato Head looks at him and goes, well, of course, Woody's not worried. He's Andy's favorite. And you learn like everything you need to know about Woody from that one line.
Yeah.
You know, and then like in the beginning of The Incredibles, there's a line where the wife says, I can't remember her name, but she says something like, you know, we can't move again or something like that. And you realize, oh, well, they've obviously had to relocate a lot because he's going back in his old ways of wanting to be a superhero when that's elite. Like, it's little stuff like that that put, and Pixar is brilliant at it. Like, they're so good at saying that stuff up without telling, and just with little like lines of dialogue and stuff. So like really watch like their films, because their characters and their worlds are amazing, but like get it just by listening to the characters.
Yes. Yes. So I wanted to kind of close the conversation by mentioning something specifically that you and I do. And I think you're going to know where I'm going with this, but I'll prompt you if you don't, because there's no for it. But
oh no, you're I'm obviously screwed.
You're off script. So you're screwed now. We do use telling in certain places. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. First drafting.
Yes, but I don't know exactly what you're thinking about.
First drafting, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So that's a good point. So, a lot of times in first drafting, and you can do this if you're writing on your own too. This doesn't have to be a collaborative thing, but I will purposely tell in some spots just so that I can keep moving and really getting the story plots in. And I usually will leave Jay a little note where I will say, you know, hey, you need to put some description in here or whatever. And you could, but you could do that for yourself. Like if you don't want to have to stop, like I don't like to stop when I'm first drafting and really like really think about certain things. So a lot of times I'll just use really short and purposely tell, I will purposely use passive voice with the intention that it will get fixed later, because Jay will come in and he'll maybe paint the scene a little better and do a little more showing than telling. And again, you know, you can do this by yourself. You can leave yourself a little note. And then when you come back through and do your revisions, you can fix it when you have a little more time to sit and think about stuff and you're not just trying to get the story out on paper.
Yeah, right. Like if, you know, if you want to say he was angry and keep typing, and then you can come back later and you can show us what anger looks like. But putting it there almost becomes a placeholder. And like you said, it keeps you going. It doesn't sort of break your flow when you're just trying to get those words out as fast as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, good stuff, man. That was I love these crafty episodes for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start banking some ideas, because like I said, with story levels, I'm in so many books and my head's in so many places and I have all these notes, and every once in a while there's a little tidbit. I'm like, yeah, that would be a good one to talk about. And this one was definitely one I thought could use a little depth, because even I remember reading exposition as ammunition at first and I was like, I don't even know what the hell that means. It's just an odd phrase, but hopefully, you know, hopefully we were able to show that a little bit better.
I see what you did there.
You see that?
Awesome. Well, there's nothing for me to read here, so I guess I got to wing it. So, but no, yeah, bank some of those ideas, man, because I know with you being like so deep enough right now, we'll get some really good episodes out of it that will people really appreciate and get a lot out of. So
for sure.
So good stuff. So with that, we just want to remind everybody to check out all the cool stuff we're doing over at patreon.com/thecareerauthor and supporting us there. And if you want to support us in another way, you could check out the cool merch we have up now with the t-shirts and stuff. Again, it's not like we're going to make a ton of money on those, but maybe someone will come up and ask you, hey, what's The Career Author? And you can tell them about the show. So you could check all that. That's at thecareerauthor.com. Easiest way, because we have the stuff listed there and it'll take you to Amazon to order it. Or I guess you could just type in Career Author on Amazon in the search bar and I'm sure you'd be able to find the stuff. So, and then one last thing, remember, if you're sending those virtual tickets for Rockapock and Sci-Fi Seattle, it's rockapock.com and sci-fiseattle.com, and under $100. So consider getting on that. It's going to be a really, really good time. So, and the people who got the virtual tickets for Night of the Writing Dead really enjoyed all the content they got, and their stories they submitted were awesome. So So anyways, so with that, we will see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to our episode of The Career Author. Later.
Bye.